Sooners of Oklahoma, 12-0 and still looking for respect nationwide.
On Sooner Nation, thank you all for tuning in to another episode of the Barry and Max Show. As always, myself, Barry, personal trainer, sports forms coach out of Tulsa, Oklahoma, and alongside me, former Sooner wide receiver, 2000 national champ, Mr. Damian Mackey, and today, D-Mac.
What's going on, B? It's good to see you again. Been a lot of traveling the last weekend. I was in Miami for a business mastermind. Had 25 of my top guys there. Pretty sick situation. We went on a yacht. But I got this hat on today, man, in commemoration of Pete Fletch. Cool story. When they did the 20-year, mm-hmm. whatever year it was, when we did this deal, I always just get, you know what I'm saying? I just happy to see my guys. And so we're all taking a picture or getting ready to take a picture, and I didn't have my hat. Pete Fletch was like, "Mac, you don't forget your hat, D-Mac. You got to have your hat on, D-Mac, even in Cali." I was like, "Pete Fleazy." So it's funny. Like, he literally gave me this hat to make sure I had it. So, yeah, man, good to be on. Love to my bro. I saw that a lot of guys posted. He had a huge showing at kind of like a memorial for him at a church, and hundreds upon hundreds of people showed up. Lay my brother to rest correctly. And then, of course, guys, happy resurrection weekend and day to everybody last week. Hopefully you guys spent time with family, loved ones, and you know, paying homage to what the weekend really means.
Amen. Absolutely. Well, there was a lot of OU news and hubba baloo over the weekend, man, and we will get to that. But first, want to let everybody know, if you're tuning in, this episode, all of the quality, the way we're able to kick this thing up, this next gear, is brought to you by OUinsider.com. If you guys want a membership to be able to see all of the news and nuggets, keep up with the what we're going to talk about today. If you guys wanted to be in the know, the inside scoop, if you will, go over there. You know, I got some feedback. D-Max obviously heard from things. Guys, again, we'll say it. We're not insiders, not trying to do the insider thing. Occasionally we get some stuff. But if you guys want the insider scoop, if you guys want all of the nuts and bolts, what's going on behind the scenes, practice video, discussion about players, where they stand right now, depth chart, all of that, man, go over to OUinsider.com and get yourself a membership. Guys, it's the best thing you'll ever do. But let's dive in today. D-Mac, yesterday was good news, but I want to start on Friday. Matter of fact, it was Good Friday, right? All this started. a certain Sooner, David Stone, who was a Ballywood recruit. For those of you coming in the middle of the movie, five-star, OU had worked on his recruitment, fair to say, 2.5 years worth of recruiting him, you know, at least. I know he had relationships dating back before then.
Middle school.
So a long-term relationship there with David Stone. He ends up at Oklahoma, and Bates was a big part of that. Venables, big part of that. He does not come to OU if that previous regime is there. There's no chance. So hold on, guys. I keep hearing the audio is kind of janky. So let's jump.
You're jumping
on
it. You're jumping.
I'm gonna do one little tweet. I can't tell if it's the Wi-Fi or the audio.
I heard a rumor it was Apple. I heard it was that Apple internet. You know, if you got that
app. Oh my gosh.
Got that iPhone community, you know what I'm saying? You might be Martin said that might be trash.
Oh my gosh. Killer. Okay. Well, hopefully it is a little bit better. And we will give this the old whirl. And if not, guys, we'll try something else. But anyways, David Stone hits the transfer portal, the long and the short of it. And OU fans were freaked out. D-Mac didn't know where it was going to go. Obviously, people had an idea of the type of school he might end up at. Miami, of course, who was heavy in his recruitment, was the first one that came to mind. He played at IMG. and had some relationships down there and with the current regime, the current coaching staff there. But OU is able to, I won't quite say pony up a bag, because it is very clear that it's more than just the money in this particular case. It's not about the money, but I would say it's more than just the money in this scenario. And OU is able to lock in on those relationships. They are able to, Nagy is able to come through and do what he needs to do in terms of NIL in order to make this happen. And without feeding into too much rumor, innuendo regarding somebody's like familial situation, which I think if we start diving in, DMAC, and really talking about like the why he hit the transfer portal, which I really think is sort of unimportant, we would be diving into some personal stuff and just things going on around him. But what I want to do is just get your initial take on, one, what you thought when you heard the news, and then two, what it means for Nagy, Venables, Joe C, the Bates, the whole team to come through, and apparently Gerald McCoy also to come through and assist in keeping this young man a Sooner.
Yeah, so I break this down into three parts. And by the way, I'm a three parts guy. If you've ever listened to our pod, I'm always giving you guys in chunks of threes. The first thing I think about it is really just my own thought process when it all came out. And there are a couple people I know him personally and who were heavily involved in getting him to Norman and really were like point of contact individuals in terms of his recruitment. And so first things first, and I don't even think I told you this, Barry. So my buddy, who's a diehard OU fan, I'm in Miami doing my thing. I got a business, you know, thing that I'm doing with a full-time thing. It's a 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. thing. And I get the text and it says David Stone's in the portal, and jaw hits the ground. So I know exactly who to text. So I send a text. And so this is the first key piece of information that started to help me connect dots. First thing I do is I send the text, Barry, mute yourself. The first thing I do is I hit the text and the person's jaw's on the ground. So I'm like, this isn't something that was expected or anticipated. We started to hear rumors that there were some conversations happening that week of, but I think the idea that he was going to potentially portal, I don't think that was ever something people thought would really happen, right? So when I send the text, the response is no way. There's no way. And I wish I could read some of the stuff that I was said, but essentially like this is totally against who the kid is. And one thing I'll never do is speak about family. By the way, I don't know his family. So who the hell am I to talk? I wish you would talk about my family. So therefore, I'm not going to talk about his family or their situation, right? But that part told me, maybe this is a gray area thing. The second thing is further conversation and finding out, like he is a pleaser. And I don't say that in a bad way. I say that in a way that people have their own personalities, their own, you know, identity makeups. And he's the type of guy that he wants others to feel good. By the way, you know what's crazy? Roy's a pleaser. Roy was a guy, but when we were kids, Roy was a guy. If we were at elementary school, we went to elementary school together. If we're at elementary school and his mom made him a good box lunch and my box lunch was just a bologna sandwich and you know what I'm saying? And some milk. Roy would make sure I was good. Like that's how Roy was when we were kids. And when we got to middle school, Roy played football before me. Roy knew about tights before me. So here I am. During our era, you were a dude if you wore tights because everybody didn't have access to tights, right? So like the first couple of games, we would play schoolyard ball and I was a baller. When we got to UC Colts, Roy was like, hey, bro, you need to, you know, put, and black was like the introductory level. So I would get my intro black tights. Roy would make sure I was good. So in correlation to Stone, I think, right, he's a guy where there are people who are in his ear and or pitching him and or, you know, just kind of posturing in a way to check his loyalty. And this is just my presumptions. I believe people were trying to demonize the program and put him in a position where, right, you know, OU wasn't doing enough. Or there was potential other places, or you know what I mean? Like if you do this, it helps this community of people in a better way. And again, if you're the type of person who wants to make sure others feel good or are good in your presence, that might be something to consider. But here's the one I really want to speak to. I wish I'm going to use Roy in the same context. And Roy was on our pod last week. So people know, yeah. Roy, he literally got on. I'm trying to see if we can get him in. But here's the other thing. I wish Roy Lee, my teammate, my brother, best man at my wedding, would be a guy who, you know, what was Roy's dollar amount in an NIL era? I think you said it. In an NIL era, if we played, let me tell you, I'm going to take the $100K they gave me and make more money than everybody because I know what to do with it. You know what I'm saying? but Roy is $750, you know what I'm saying? In those times, Roy is a guy who could command whatever the hell he wanted. I was regionally recruited and recruited by a lot of Ivies, Stanford. You know, I committed to Stanford. I wasn't recruited by University of Miami, Edgerrin James years. I wasn't recruited by Florida State, Charlie Ward, Warwick Dunn, Peter Warwick years, right? I wasn't recruited by Michigan, C. Wood, you know, end up being Tom Brady. Roy was. You know, like I was recruited by Texas, OU. I was recruited by Fresno State, UCLA, USC. I was recruited by UW. And I got recruited by Harvard, Princeton, Stanford. You know, I was really considering Columbia. I really liked Columbia. Their business program was, oh, man, you know, I'm a finance guy. Yeah. Seriously, Coach Krejci. I don't know if he's – I'm sure he's not in the game anymore. But I wish Roy would have his red shirt freshman year. Where he had a medical red. Guys, Roy didn't redshirt because he couldn't play. Roy redshirted because two or three games into our freshman year, the 98 season, the John Blake season, he started to have back problems. I wish Roy would have been a guy who got 750 that season and then medical redshirted and then was awesome, like, yeah, I'm leaving. I'm just telling you, the temperament of our locker room would have been like, and excuse my candor, I got to be me. Negro, you selfish. Negro, you didn't earn 750. Like, let's keep it a buck, right? Like, you know, Patrick Fletcher is a guy who that season ended up having to play and was critical in some wins for us. And he's a guy who wasn't even on Scully. He may have merited 200,000 of your 750. Does that make sense? So, yeah. Like, the behind the curtain conversations that I would have been having, our team would have been having, I bet you there were some guys on the team who he respects and who, you know, have some sway in his temperament and how he feels, who were probably saying, bro, you serious right now? Like, come on, dog, we building something here. People make fun of the Soul Mission. I'm telling you guys right now, it has a tangible impact. People make fun of, you know, the poetry and the brotherly, fatherly love of some of the coaches on the staff. I'm telling you, it has an impact. And the kid makes an impulsive decision because of a lot of the outside noise that they now have to address and deal with as 18 and 19 year old kids. He's still a kid.
Yeah.
Those structures, that framework that's in place, right? The Soul Mission, the coaches coaching the whole player, right? You know, having that community of this is OU DNA. This is how we do it here. I think that had a lot to do with him making the decision to come back in a way that a lot of people will kind of discount. And then I'll say this last thing and pass it back. Word on the street is that the program didn't pay him a substantial larger sum. In fact, I think it would probably be problematic if they set a precedent of when a player cries and says, I'm out of here. Okay, we'll just pony up and throw you more money. Well, then you're going to have to finish a lot of issues that way. Right. And so I think this was more, Barry, of the stakeholders in the building, the individuals who matter in the building, the culture and climate where he is, you know, could, regardless of if you're going to make more money at Miami or some other school, can they duplicate that? I think the right people were able to get into his ear and confirm for him, like, bro, where you are is where you need to be. And in year two, go perform like we all know you can, like you've worked your ass off to do. And the money will be the money.
Yeah, there were multiple angles coming at this. And I would say the biggest, most important piece was it was not OU just dumping in more money into the situation. One, you have certain money earmarked for different things, and I'm sure things were discussed. There may have been a change in some things. I think we can say now we know that his deal went from being more straight up and down guaranteed to more incentive based, which that is what you do if you are a ballyhooed player and the production wasn't there and you saw guys like a Jaden Jackson have good production. You've seen Grayson Halton, who's been in the program, have good production. How do you tell those guys that the money is the same and or potentially less, but they're out there producing more? And I think that's a great point that you make about Roy. And the Stone right now, not too dissimilar from the first year of Nico, where you're kind of bringing him in as potential. You're bringing him in and you're paying him for what he can be. He's that Patrick Mahomes who's sitting the bench for a year or so that you're still paying. He's still on his deal, but he's a guy who needs a little bit of seasoning. You want to see him develop, improve the technique. And I think that's what I think in this particular case, the relationships and the development and what OU is as a program, which is why I heard through the grapevine just a few things. That's why you bring in a Gerald McCoy to have that discussion with young man and say, hey, I know this is what you want to do. And sometimes you know this, D-Mac. It doesn't even necessarily need to be said by people around you, but sometimes you feel the pressure of, man, I feel like these folks who are around me are expecting me to do something to amend, improve a situation, to go after something that maybe isn't something I want to go after because I like where I'm at. But as you said, sometimes when you are a people pleaser, it can be really hard to say no, which brings me to something else I want to talk about with this, because I do think Stone, from a development standpoint, his long-term money, his long-term value, I believe is in staying at Oklahoma and working under Bates. You now see what these Clemson D tackles have done over the past few years staying in the league, right? And that's a hard position to stay in. You got to stay healthy. You have to stay strong. You've got to not have big injuries. There's a lot of factors, and you also have to be a good player and be drafted really high, you know, if you want to get paid like an elite player. Especially on the kind of your first go round. But one of the ways I wanted to ask this question is, I don't think it is quite discussed enough the money situation in regards to 17, 18, 19 years of age versus 22, 23, 24 years of age, which is still young. It's still pretty young to have that much earning potential. That's not the norm. Those guys are the absolute exceptions. But with your financial background and some of the things that you've obviously talked with players about before, and dealing with finances, but typically it's not been college athletes. What are some of the pitfalls or detriments in this particular case that just make it hard for, one, players to just manage their own money? Being right out of high school, but then two, having to manage relationships that are going to come up where you have people who are much older than you, who you've probably looked to for wisdom over the years. And now you're in that situation of power because that paradigm has shifted. You know, if you were talking to a young man who was making that kind of money, what are some of the things you would say? What's some of the advice? And then just kind of the mindset of what that would be like.
Yeah, that's a good question. And I don't want to get too far into the weeds. I said it on our pod maybe a month or so ago. There are two high school coaches in the Dallas Metro who I've coached with prior who are literally asking me to come speak to their programs because they have a lot of kids. That one of them has a kid who's going to be a $1 million kid. He's a 2026 tackle. I don't want to speak to the kid or the program just and privatism for them. But he's like, Mackie, I got probably 10 kids who are all working NIL deals with agents and universities and so on. And he, you know, we've known each other 10 years. He's like, I trust you. I trust your business. I trust your judgment. Would you come and talk to them about their financial household? Would you come and talk to them about some financial and education and so on and so forth? And so I say that to say, and I just thought about this. I don't think I ever told you this. I got pitched. Somebody pitched me probably 8 months ago or maybe a year ago. I got pitched to be a part of some NIL. I guess it was like an agent. And he was like, hey, I want you to come be my money guy. You're the perfect guy, ex-ball player, finding, you know, like, and it just felt kind of sleazy to me. Like, nah, bro, I'm not about to get involved in whatever the shenanigans you got cooking. Hopefully it's legal, but I'm not going to do any gray area because I have a very profitable business outside of that. And I don't want to put my name at risk in any kind of shenanigans that might, you know what I'm saying? It just didn't make sense. But let me throw some data at you, bro. You know me, I'm an emotional guy, but I like numbers too. Guys, one out of three. And I specifically looked up athletes. I did not put scholarship. Here's why I didn't put scholarship. If I'm on Scholly and Barry's not, and we're in fall camp and we have those speakers come in and speak to the team, Barry gets the same information I get access to. Does that make sense? Mm. Like, we're all exposed to the different resources that are available to the team. Now, would Roy, Rocky, and Hype probably have a separate meeting with Bob and some Series 7? You know what I'm saying? Money manager as they're preparing for draft day. Yes. But aside from that, all of us had access to the same information. And I know they got the red room. And when the speakers come in, when I went to Tennessee, it wasn't like, hey, Mackie, speak to these 12 guys. It was the team and the walk-ons and the specials and the red shirts. They were all in there. And so that I know that college athletes are given the same information. One out of three. Has any type of financial education prior to college. 60% said they had nothing. 10% said, I don't remember, which willful ignorance is what it is, right? Yep. And so, yeah, imagine being a kid who comes from a household where mom makes, you know, it's 2025. So mom makes 55 grand, dad makes 60, 75 grand, you know. And you guys live in a three bed, two and a half bathroom home, couple credit cards, couple cars, blah, blah, blah. But I'm talking middle class. I'm not talking about buddy from East St. Louis. I'm not talking about buddy that went to a SOC, you know what I'm saying, and staying at grandma's house because otherwise he would have to go to Hutch or Skyline or something. But he, you know, SOC has a good program. And so he's able to, you know, I'm not talking about those kids. I'm just talking about, you know, your middle class kids. They have no idea. Listen, school teaches us how to go to work a job. Again, don't get me on a soapbox. I'll get on a soapbox and go crazy. That's why I'm an entrepreneur. But school teaches you to go work for somebody. That's exactly what elementary prepares you for middle school, which prepares you for high school. Stars turn to A's and B's, grades. Grades turns to GPAs. GPAs turn to college degrees. College degrees turn to jobs. Monday to Friday, 12 o'clock lunch. Anyway, I'll get off on my soapbox because that really pisses me off. These guys need someone teaching and educating them. The sole mission probably needs, and they probably are 10 steps ahead of us. They need a financial component. And by the way, I think they should intentionally do it in a way where it's like, this is what I would do if I were in this category of money. If you're a $50,000 a year guy, right, and you want to leverage these 3 to 5 years to set you up for life or some long-term play or some level of consistency, a down payment on a house, whatever, they should have those guys. They should have a workshop day and the 50K guys are in one room and the 250K guys in another room and the 750K guys. Do you know how much value that brings to those kids? Because if someone's teaching me how to take my 750 and do something predictable, track record, credible, that education in itself is enough for me to say, I better stick around here. Number one, because they got my best interests at heart. But number two, they're teaching me how to do more than just make money. They're teaching me how to protect and grow money. Right. And so, you know, like that part for me is something that I hope we're heading in that direction. Because Barry, to your point, an 18-year-old who's get a half a million, if they gave me $500,000 my first year at OU when I was just doing my general education classes, I probably would have sent a half of it home. Right. And then I probably would have 50K, we kicking it. Right. We're going to probably hit Dallas, Vegas. Can't hit Vegas at 18. It ain't fun. But we're going to do something. And then guess what would have happened the following year? Uncle Sam would have kicked my ass. Ooh. I had nobody taught me that about that part. Whoa, what? I got these what these federal taxes. What are these? Wait. What is this Social Security thing? I'm not 65. I'm 18. Why I gotta pay into this thing for old folk? What is this? Right? All the different aspects of money that you may not necessarily understand when you're a co-ed and a teenager. I imagine guys who think about it. You made $800,000. Uncle Sam wants 23%. That's like, you feel me? That's 20 grand, 1880, you know, and state of Oklahoma has state taxes. So, you know, state of Oklahoma wants 5 to 10%, right? That's another. So we done spent the money. By the way, the money come, it's 1099, I imagine. They going to cut you the check and then say, hey, at the end of the year, you reconcile that with Uncle Sam. Yeah. So you have 800,000 in your account. You know what I'm saying? It ain't like, it's not like a job where they kind of park that to the side and they say, hey, we're going to use this to pay your taxes or you know, to project. That $800,000 hit, I guarantee you Mercedes Benz and condos and, you know what I'm saying? Crab legs. I mean, let me not be stereotypical, but people, when people get money, you know what they do? They find ways to spend it.
Oh yeah,
for sure. And so, I'd be willing to bet to my, what we were talking about earlier, Barry, I bet you somebody came in and actually went through the financials with him too to help him better understand the impact of what financials would look like. Cost of living. I saw people speaking about what's the cost of living in Oklahoma versus a place like Miami. You know, there's a lot of variables that need to be tended to, like legitimately. And yeah, listen, Damian Mackey at 18 versus DMAC graduating OU at 23 is a different guy.
Yeah,
I'm just telling you. Just that 5-year window when I got my finance degree, walking out that door, man, Tom Condon offered me the opportunity to be a freaking agent if I would go to OU Law. He was going to pay for me to go to OU Law. Look up Tom Condon if you know who he
is.
Wow. I don't know if you don't know who he is, look him up. He was Roy's agent his first year, but he was the quarterback O-line guy. He was like, dude, I want you to come work for my agency. And they were at IMG. I actually went to IMG before IMG had high school football. They had like, IMG is a, they had like soccer and tennis.
They were more like a club deal for a while before they, that's right.
100%. Football probably came 10, 15 years ago. Roy was going to do the process in 02. Tom Condon was like, bro. And he ended up taking a guy from Michigan who won a natty with Brady in 97. Cool guy. I forgot his name. But anyway, point is, that 5 years is absolutely a game changer in terms of maturity, in terms of education, in terms of mindset and how you look at money.
Yeah. And just the ability to think, you know, that's what college at the end of the day is supposed to teach us. It's to get us thinking about subjects, about our decisions, about things that we're doing in a more like full, well-rounded way. And I know the comments are
Bagman, bro. He said his soul mission taken. No, soul mission is not interrupting practice. I think he's tongue in cheek. I think he's kidding.
Yeah, probably so. Bagman's great. Shout out to Bagman on here. But it is it's hard to tell people no. It's hard to do those things when you're young and in that scenario. And I don't necessarily envy them in that situation, man, to have to make those decisions, potentially cut off relationships, you know, to try and do that at that age. It's much easier when you're 30, 34, have a family, you're a professional, and you'd say, you know what, I need to eliminate this person from my life. They are not adding to it. But when they are someone you've relied upon and, you know, 5, 6 years ago, they were taking you to practice, like that is a really hard relationship to say, you know what, well, I need to do what is best for me. And Stone, I think in some areas does have a certain level of maturity, which is why this worked out as it did. You know, the judgments that people make, and this isn't, again, kind of like you said, it's not to soapbox, but I think all too often as fans looking at it from an outsider's perspective, and knowing what just happened with Nico at Tennessee and knowing what we're probably going to see down the road, it's so easy to rush to make the money judgment, right? To say that that's what this was all about and that, you know, the ultimate finish line was just getting him more money. And that's not always the case. You know, that there's a lot of other things that work well as recognition, or to build or put some more trust in that relationship, to fill the proverbial bucket, if you will. And it's not always cash, right? Cash helps. And I'm sure it makes you feel better about a situation where something's not going so good. But I think credit still needs to go to GM, Jim Nagy. So still think that this situation was managed well. And I've seen some criticism out there of him in the vein of thinking is, OU brought Stone here on a deal that was this, and then Nagy is now trying to flip the script and make it this. And I think what's important is the reason Nagy was brought in, guys, was to create some consistency so you don't have the contentiousness amongst the players. So you don't have a Patrick Fletcher who's saying, you know, Roy, I was actually on the field and you're making close to $1 million and I'm getting paid this. You want to avoid those situations at all costs. And the best way to avoid that is to have a fair metric that everybody plays by the same rules, right? You have to at a certain point, and it'll get ironed out. The further down the road we get on this, the more ironed out the details will be. You know, in the NFL, it's clear. You know, if Davante Adams looks and sees what CD Lamb is making, or vice versa, it'd be a bad example. Let's flip it. If CD is seeing what Davante is making, Davante in his prime or in his last deal, that's a baseline, right? Cooper Kupp is a baseline for when CD goes to renegotiate that deal, saying, you know, this is my potential, this is what I've done. And in college athletics, that baseline just does not exist yet. There is no hard and fast way that these deals are evaluated and figured. And OU is trying to navigate that and still have money to pay a guy, you know, like Marion from BYU, who they're trying to bring in at wide receiver. For those of you who maybe haven't seen that, OU is attacking that situation pretty strongly right now from the looks of it. But I do want to go into DMAC. There was some rumor about some other guys, and I won't even.
Can I say one thing before we do? Can we say one? Can I say one thing? Because I think this is pertinent to say. Somebody asked about income. I think it's taxed as ordinary income. I don't think it's taxed as a bonus type where it's going to be super taxed. I think it's ordinary income in terms of taxes. But I think this is something that needs to be brought to the light. I think more people need to start talking about this. I have heard firsthand from a parent who has a kid going through the process that schools are now offering multiple year deals. And if you remember, we were talking about college football and basketball, especially on the men's side, is really the most volatile negotiation arena in all of sports, only because every player is a free agent every year, right? Most sports, you have a 2, 3, 4, 5 baseball is going decade long contracts, right? Where you're kind of locked in. Whereas college football, it's year to year. And just hearing firsthand, it was interesting to hear that a kid who is a NIL level talent was being offered by multiple schools, and some schools were offering $300K, $400K a year. If you remember, I was telling you, like, it's real. Like, I was like, they were showing me content, like, dang, this is, they're going to get cut this check. And he ultimately went with the deal from a school that offered his family a multiple year deal. And so, and so again, here's a nuance to that conversation, right? So the negotiation was initially fashioned that the school was making promises for the kid based upon production, where there was no language that specifically said so long as he met a minimum threshold, they were forced to. So the parent was a little concerned, if that makes sense. I'm going to give you 300, then 350, then 450. That sounds good. But if in year two, you decide you don't want the kid, you could cut him. Or there wasn't language that says he was guaranteed that. And so the parent had an attorney look it over and said, hey, I want you to look at this through the lens of what's in the best interest of my family. And the attorney made the recommendation that the parent should have language that says this three-year deal. In other words, we're going to honor not chasing the portal for two more seasons, but you're going to honor that unless my son does something crazy, you're going to honor these payments you're making to my son. And so in reality, it's creating a multi-year deal. And so, and by the way, firsthand conversation with this individual, and the individual actually took that deal. There was a car as a portion of the deal. There's like a condo year one on campus, year two, there's a condo. So all these other ancillary components, but it's very interesting. And I do think it's leading down the road towards multiple year deals. Mm-hmm. Barry, I think there's going to be stipulations that this is contingent upon 90% show rate at summer workouts. I think this is going to be contingent upon 2.5 GPA and you can't miss five classes, right? They're going to start positioning this to address everything, because on both sides, schools are seeing how they lost money. Bagman said it, and Bagman, I'm going to take credit. Bagman stole that from our pod a month and a half ago when I said, I think a competitive disadvantage OU has is year one, they created the every scholarship player gets $50,000. Whereas in the marketplace we are now, that's probably not the most prudent way to do business. You're literally earmarking funds in ways where you're eliminating the ability to go get some of those top echelon guys to guys who don't necessarily merit $50,000. And there isn't precedent that other schools duplicated this, right? So like we can take that away at this point. In that same vein, I think schools are going to start saying, hey, five-star Bobby, right? We like you. Mom, I tell you what, we can do a deal, $750, or we can do a three-year deal where so long as Bobby maintains this GPA, Mom, you want to make sure he's taken care of off the field, not just on the field, right? Yes. Hey, Mom, coming into town. By the way, they got all kinds of stuff for parents. My parents get to come to town on the school and have access to this type of flight. Like, I want a direct flight, four tick. Like, it's crazy. Some of the stuff that's in the language, Barry, like legit, it's in the language. And I'm sure schools are going to start saying, five-star Bobby, although we can do a one-year deal, we're more so, looking to do a two or a three-year deal. And here's the deal. This whole deal packages you preparing you for 3 years outside of high school to go directly to the league if you're as good as you think you are. Like, to me, that's the direction I think this needs to go down. And I think it's prudent to say, I actually heard a parent tell me that they were offered a multiple-year deal where there was acceleration and the compensation and then a car and then an apartment, things of that nature down the road.
And that is the way ultimately to end up combating the transfer portal, right? You hit the portal, your deal is null and void, right? You put your name in there, you immediately void any and all obligation the school has that this deal. And what you'll see, right, is players who are really highly rated, maybe have like an option on year three where they can look or search out. Like, that's what you're going to eventually see as these things get negotiated out. It's going to be something that separates the really talented higher upper echelon players from guys who are just trying to get a deal. If you're a player who's three star, maybe you're concerned about financials down the road, and you have an option to do a 3 or 4 year deal with a school, I think you're going to do that. And yeah, I do believe, I think you're right. It is a 1099 situation, because it is interesting now that, and I think this helps the players, now that the schools can essentially just kind of pay directly, right? And it's not this thing where it's hidden in a bunch of collectives and you're doing things. It still felt a little bit shady when it was at that point. It no longer feels that way. The problem is, if you're an athlete, that money really cannot be hidden, right? You can't, say, I didn't get that. So from a tax standpoint, from an income standpoint, you are definitely stuck. Wanted to see what Kearney's question was. Maggie, is he going to stand up in court? I think it's going to be a learning curve. DMAC, I don't know if you saw the question come through. And obviously, guys, we're not attorneys. I actually do have someone I might reach out to.
I'll tell you this:
attorney families might be willing to discuss this.
The families are looking through them as if these are contractual agreements that could stand up in court. I would say all parties are, but just the firsthand conversation I had, Chuck, the family presented it to their attorney. And again, I get the call back. I think I called you or text you, but I was like,
yeah.
Like, this is real. Like, you know, because you know how you hear people like, oh, they got $1 million. Oh, they got $750. Like, it's like, is it? Are they really get like, no. These negotiations are real now. Like you said, the schools, this is not some third channel, 2 degrees of separation where there's kind of all this fogginess. These are actually true negotiations where families are including attorneys and schools are, I'm sure language is being written in a way to CYA. And so it's business. It's definitely direct, you know, belly to belly, kneecap to kneecap business happening now. And I wouldn't be surprised if you see some type of, let me tell you what I think will happen. The school will say Bobby gets half a mil if he does A, B, C, and D. And this is what was happening in the past. And this is why kids were leaving, right? Texas A&M was having this issue. A&M would say, hey, we'll give you half a mil. But you got to go to class, do these 10 signings, do this other thing, do this other thing. The kids would come, not keep their end of the bargain, and then they throw A&M under the bus. But in reality, they also weren't keeping their end of the bargain too.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And so that was a two-way street. Now it's kind of very clear, black and white. Mom and dad have this. The school gave it to them. Bobby understands exactly what the expectations are. I think when it doesn't happen, I think people are very clear as to why. But I wouldn't be surprised if in the next 2 years, 3 years, we hear of some court proceedings. Somebody's going to want to sue somebody, and we'll learn from there how that all works.
Oh, yeah. It's coming down the road. I mean, that's how all of this stuff ends up getting ironed out. Real quick before we get off. It seems like OU will maintain things for the foreseeable future across the defensive line. I'll just say that if you guys want to know more on that situation and other guys who were potentially looking at portal, it looks like OU's in good shape. You know, there was good news that came out yesterday. Besides it just being a resurrection day, there was some good news on the Sooner front. So looks like things are going to hold serve from that perspective. OU is absolutely a shopping receiver in the portal. And, you know, we haven't had a chance to talk a ton, D-Mac, about OU adding in Jaden Ott. But real quick before we get out of here, guys, if you want to see on this channel, I've already done a full athletic evaluation on Ott. Right now, he walks into the SEC as probably he's for sure a top three back. He might be the best back in the SEC when he runs. His patience, his length, his ability to cover space reminds me a lot of Alvin Kamara, kind of a young Alvin Kamara in terms of body type, running style. His patience is,
I like
fantastic.
That cop.
Yeah, he is a smooth back who just can get 7 to 8 yards. He plays well behind his pads. He plays well with his blockers. He sets things up. And more importantly, D-Mac, he keeps his eyes up when he hits the hole. I can't tell you how many plays I watched where nothing is there. And just because he kept his eyes up, kept his feet moving, and was able to get that linebacker to step just outside that gap, he's able to hit it. And then he's got legitimate 4-4 speed. He is a home run out the gate. If he gets behind you, you are not catching him. OU was in much need of that. And now you've got a guy with X-Rob and Ott. So real quick, D-Mac, your thoughts on OU getting the big addition there?
I'm going to pat us on the back again and throw some love to you. We said it. And everybody called us crazy saying the OGs or the returning starters were good enough. I think OU saw that they weren't. Again, the film was just too clear and evident. We missed too many opportunities and we didn't create enough opportunities. With X and Ott, you have a serious and legitimate thunder and lightning tandem. And then here's the thing. Now, all of a sudden, I like Barnes a lot more now. I like Barnes a lot more as a 2B. Oh, I like Sochuk a lot more. If Ott's our guy for 6 or 7 games that, you know, is the primary 18 to 22 ball carries. But now Ott has a game or two where he's nicked up. We got another guy who doesn't have the wear and tear, but there's chemistry with the offensive line who can go get you 150 and has done it in the past. That's a sexy backfield. If we make it through this portal season without any of those guys leaving, which I think there could be some potential for the coaches to ask one or two to leave. That'll be interesting to see if before these, I think it's like 5 or 6 more days, we'll see who is around at the end of this season, at the end of this portal window, I guess I bet is a better term for it. I like the group. I like Ott. I told you guys, I had a kid That's crazy how all this stuff connects. One of my teammates at OU is from Houston. His son played in Houston and wanted to go to OU. His dad played at OU. OU didn't recruit him heavily. He ended up at Missouri. He played a year or two at Missouri. He ended up transporting out to Cal. True freaking story. He went to Cal last year or last two seasons, and he was like, bro, our running back is legit, and now the running back's coming to OU. How crazy is that? How that stuff works out.
Well, so, I feel like we had that discussion.
Yeah, we did. And his mom went to OU and ran track. Dad played football with us. He was a walk-on. Mom was a track star at OU. This is not the Caden Durham situation, so this is not what we're talking about. But this kid went to Missouri. He was there the year, what's his name? What's our receiver's name? Who was there for two seasons?
Oh, Theo Weiss.
Theo, yeah. So he was like, Mac, I'm locking him up because he's like little bro to me. You know what I'm saying? His dad was my teammate. So, you know, we talk ball. But he felt like he didn't get a fair shake, went to Cal. He was like, our running back is legit. And he's the guy we now have. So excited about that. Excited about the position group. Here it is. Facts is this. Murray got to step up. This is a great year for Murray. People try to group Murray and Joe John in the same group for me. And I'm sure they probably know or have heard or whatever. My truth is my truth. I had teammates at OU and I'd be like, you're not, you know what I'm saying? You're not up to par. And we would have those conversations and sometimes they would step it up and sometimes they would transfer out or fall off. Like DeMarco has skins. Joe John to me is a different conversation. I don't want to talk about that because my mom would say, if you don't got nothing positive to say, don't say it. But DeMarco is in a 2-year situation. He got to own it. Like, bro, you ain't been up to par, dog. You're an OU great, All-American, running back MVP in the NFL, and a good guy, and has shown in the past to be a good coach. Damn it, do it again. We need it now. We need it this year. You know what I'm saying? Like I don't think I'm not going to walk on eggshells to say that because it's fact. I'm a Sooner. He's a Sooner. We both want to win. We both want what's best for the program. And so I just think that this is now puts him in a position where we have I hate to do this, but like a P. Ryan and Mixon. Like we have a guy in Ott who, if you give him a step, he can go take it 80. And we have a guy in X Rob who Alabama couldn't stop him from leaning on them. The kid, what do we talk about? Freshmen turn into sophomores. He's going to have his grown man strength. He's already a big, strong kid. I think this is a season where I expect, by the way, I'll say this. I think DeMarco is going to prove a lot of his naysayers and critics. I'll call myself a critic. His naysayers and critics wrong this year and showing that he can lead a running back room to be extremely successful.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And sometimes there are coaches who are really good. I'm sure you've experienced this in your time just being around the sport. Sometimes there are coaches who are really good at getting to the second, third, fourth guy on the depth chart and elevating the talent that is maybe lesser than so they can get the most out of themselves. Those coaches exist. And in a guy like that, I think Bimbo has historically been a guy like that who has elevated players who probably shouldn't be there. Maybe they got a couple physical attributes that help them. But DeMarco may be the kind of guy who, if he is playing with a scenario where he's got a backfield full of some legitimate talent, and now he can get in there and coach the nuances of the game, and it's guys who are able to do things similar to what he could do, right? So he can get into the nitty-gritty of the position as opposed to, you know, the bare-bone basics, right? If he's got guys like that, I think his value goes up significantly as a coach. And I'm not saying that that's the case, but there are coaches who are just better at coaching those high-level guys to be more high-level than to take a room that's so-so. And like I think Kel Gundy is probably the best example of every year OU had a guy in the running back room who was solid, right? Not every year did they have an Adrian Peterson back there, but a lot of times there was a guy solid and ready. And Murray may just not be that kind of coach, but you get him an Ott and an X-Rob. Who knows? D-Mac, let's get up on out of here today, man. Closing thoughts. Your Lakers did lose.
Thunder, lucky. Man. Put it I'm on. Glad, I'm glad I didn't say Lakers in four. I'm glad that's not the one, right? We got to win four in a row now. Nah, they play bad. Shout out to OKC. They play well. Shout out to the Dubs. The Dubs handled Houston. Yeah, guys, we're heading into the time of year where guys make the most improvement. We're not going to hear a ton of stuff. I mean, I guess, you know, there are certain things that people will give you information on during workouts, but like, this is the time where the team starts to meld and mold into what they're going to become August. I guess I shouldn't say now. It's in about a month. It's mid-May when they really start. They're kind of taking time away and letting their bodies rest up and probably exit interviews, things of that nature. But this season, in the sense of after spring ball, between spring ball and fall camp, that's where you're going to see the most growth. Guys are going to be focused on their bodies. Quarterback's going to be putting a lot of pressure on catching balls and proper depth and head, you know, where do I turn my head and how many steps on this? What do I do in hot? So I look forward to seeing us propel ourselves into being something to be reckoned with. I like that we are getting positive pub from a conference standpoint this year. Last year, we were the sisters of the poor coming into the SEC. This year, we've got a running back group that they say should be number one. Offensive scheme and game plan is in the top three. Quarterback, the number one portal quarterback in the conference, right? All those rumors about Jaden. By the way, I think I posted this on Insider. The rumors came out that Jaden might be leaving. I made one text and was told he ain't leaving. In fact, he locked in. That's all I needed to hear. Beautiful. You know what I'm saying? And so you get Jaden Gibson back, and then obviously we get the other Gibson healthy. There's enough talent in that room for Sanford Emmett to get those guys ready to go. The defense is stacked. Offensive line, I think we did a fun Nagy and Beat and Bo and those guys did a phenomenal job addressing what we needed to solidify that unit. Damn it, I'm poking my chest out. Like I told you the first pod we got back when we got back to it, like I'm not going to ever talk about OU in a mediocre standpoint. Hell nah. Like that, I don't know that OU. And I know the coach that's in charge right now came in and changed that immediately. So I'm not about to be here and expect that 8-4 is what we gonna be subject to. So all of us, man, Barry, let's get some alumni and let's get some stuff cooking over the course of the summer, having some conversations with some of the guys who've gone through the program, selling and telling some stories. And for all of you guys, appreciate you. You guys keep us going. You know what I'm saying? This has been a phenomenal journey for me. I just love doing it. I don't care about the money. Don't need the money. Barry's my guy. I want my steak, though.
Hey, man.
If we do a steak dinner, I do want my steak. Otherwise than that, man. Yeah, just keeping it cool.
Killer. And, guys, we do have a guest coming up. I won't put the name out there just yet. We're still ironing out the details. But we got a couple of them who are within the program right now. Big centerpieces within what OU does on a daily basis. Not players, I will say that, although that's also kind of in the fire. Well, we'll see where that goes, but that's never really been our lane, the player interview kind of deal. The former players, yes, but we're not opposed to it, but we do have some cool stuff coming up, people reaching out to us wanting to get involved on the show. And part of that, man, we're on OU Insider, OUinsider.com. Go over there, get yourself a membership affiliated with Rivals. Rivals, I will say, when it comes to ranking the players, star ratings, info, just a top shelf website. It's always kind of my first point of reference, guys. So if you want to go check it out.
Chuck was coming for you earlier. He said, "Hey man, you put an 8 o'clock start." Chuck, hold on, Chuck. We run full time businesses. What you don't know is right before he clicked start, Barry had folk in the background at his gym. He was doing what he needed to do as a pro. So I hear you, Chuck. Definitely, that's good feedback. I think it was, I saw it the first time. I wasn't gonna say nothing, but I definitely saw it.
That's funny.
Chuck, hold us accountable, bro. Hold us accountable.
Appreciate that, Chuck. Yeah, we just, to be honest, like full disclosure, just threw a time down there because I wasn't sure. Like sometimes these pods during the day, there's no telling on like when we'll break free and be able to shuffle. Me and D-Mac are in separate places. I got a crazy schedule during the day, so we just try to make it work. But Chuck, you're a phenomenal listener, man, and all you guys are. I want to thank everybody for tuning in today. We will see you soon. And